Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And good afternoon, everyone. From Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America, I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the August 14th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, coming up on today's show, a return visit by former NASA flight director and shuttle program manager Wayne Hale. Wayne retired from NASA at the end of July, leaving, well, rather unexpectedly to many. And we hope to learn a little bit more today about what his thinking is and what his plans are for the future. It should be a great conversation. If you're part of the space community or just a fan and you have a question or comment for Wayne, or heck, for me, we invite you to join us in the program today. Give us a call. The number's as usual, 321-768-1240. Or send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com. And lest we forget, AT&T wireless customers here along the Space Coast can dial *1240 on their phones and make a free phone call right here into the studio. You know, I got to tell you, as we talk about what's been going on, it has been one roller coaster of a week. Well, not only around the Behnke House, but certainly within the space community. I will spare you my personal trials and tribulations, but at least when it comes to the space community, it has been quite a week. This week we've watched developments unfold at the International Space Station as a critical coolant pump that needs replacing has not cooperated with our spacewalking astronauts. The unexpected job that it was hoped would take only two spacewalks is now likely to take at least four, as the problem is not yet solved. They did get the old pump off the station this week, and a new one yet to be replaced, the next spacewalk set for Monday. Waking up this past Tuesday, we found out that a good friend to many of us, former NASA Administrator Sean O'Keefe, was feared dead, along with his son Kevin, after the plane that they were in crashed in Alaska. It seemed like it just took forever that day, a way too long time to find out, thankfully, that they both survived. They were both banged up pretty good, some broken bones, lacerations, some burns. But both now today are reported to be well out of danger and are recovering nicely. Our prayers, of course, go out to the O'Keefes, for their continued recovery. But certainly as well to the family of Senator Stevens, the late Senator Stevens now, and the others who lost their lives in that crash. It was a long day. Back up in space, let's see, the annual Perseid meteor shower was this week, if at least it peaked Thursday, Friday. And if you were patient and went outside and didn't have any clouds in your way, you were treated to some pretty spectacular streaks of light in the sky. I went outside with my son, Christopher. I think it was late Thursday, pushing into early Friday morning. And as we stood out in the driveway, we caught, even in the Melbourne sky here with all the light pollution, we saw quite a few shooting stars as they came streaking overhead. And it was kind of fun sitting there. We talked, had some deep philosophical thoughts about the universe brought on because Christopher was reading Carl Sagan's Cosmos and discovering that whole book and that video series for the first time. It's interesting to see a modern 21st century college kid watch a series made in the 70s, early 80s for a whole other audience and a whole other set of special effects. Well, in any case, many of you may have been wakened up this morning, perhaps earlier than you wanted to be today, by another streak of light in the sky as we all witnessed an absolutely perfect launch of an Atlas V rocket from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. Liftoff did come right on time at 7:07. Eastern Time, and the Advanced EHF Military Communications Satellite did separate from the Centaur upper stage exactly as planned 51 minutes later, and boy, did that rocket take off. They warned us it would, and it moved fast. and it was quite a sight as the sun was coming up around the Space Coast. But for me, the happiest space-related news of the week came yesterday and continues today with the opening of the new Air Force Space and Missile Museum's History Center, which is something that a lot of folks have been working on for a long time in one carnation or another for at least more than a couple of decades. Often known as Brevard's best-kept secret, the Space and Missile Museum itself is located at the site where Explorer 1 was launched to become America's first satellite in orbit. Now, unfortunately, since the 9/11 terrorist attacks and the resulting and I think very necessary security measures that have been taken at our military facilities, it has been almost impossible for the general public to visit the museum without going at least through some hoops that makes it difficult for just the average traveler just to show up at the gate and want to get in. So what has happened is that a facility just outside the gate into Cape Canaveral Air Force Station at the end of State Road 401 was made available to the museum by the Air Force, and volunteers there, led by the curator Emily Perry, have brought some space and missile hardware out to the new History Center and created basically an exhibit for every single launch pad at the Cape, starting from Complex 1 all the way up to Complex 47. And a lot of neat artifacts, a lot of neat pictures, a lot of neat facts, and just a real nice little walkthrough to browse around the facility. Also at the History Center, a new gift shop run by the Air Force Space and Missile Museum Foundation. The foundation, a nonprofit community-based organization, of course, whose mission is to support the museum in all the ways that a foundation usually does. You should know, in the interest of full disclosure, that I am a secretary, or the secretary, for the foundation board and a member of the executive committee who has been working on getting this History Center open for many years, and it's just I think it's going to be a great public asset, a neat thing. I do want to thank publicly and acknowledge retired Brigadier General Greg Pavlovich, who is our foundation chairman, for his leadership throughout the process. And certainly want to thank publicly 45th Space Wing Commander Brigadier General Ed Wilson for his interest and cooperation in making the what really was a really big final push to get everything ready and get the History Center open since he has been here at the wing. We had an opening ceremony yesterday for the History Center, and this morning at 9 a.m., the History Center opened to the public for the first time, and it will remain open until 5 o'clock today. The normal hours to start right now, and again, this is just the start of something that we hope will grow into something much bigger as the weeks, months, and years progress. So this is just the baby steps. But we are going to be open Saturdays 9 to 5, on Sunday noon to 4, and take Monday off, and then open Tuesday through Thursday from 9 to 2. And so some good chances to get in, good chances for us to eventually start hosting some kids and field trips and that kind of thing, and all sorts of neat plans ahead. Best of all, the whole thing is free. Admission is absolutely free. You just show up, walk in, and enjoy the exhibits. And if you'd like to buy a souvenir, a neat space-related thing. By the way, we're going out of our way to create some really neat Cape Canaveral-based space-related type souvenirs that you can't get anywhere else on the Space Coast. Not in any of the gift shops along Cocoa Beach, not up at the visitor complex at the Kennedy Space Center. And so it's a really neat little shop that we've got going. And I hope you take advantage of it and get a chance to get out there soon. Again, the History Center located just outside the gate of Cape Canaveral Air Force Station at the end of State Road 401. You basically have to go through the first outer entrance of the air station, past the Pass and ID building on your right. Don't turn into the Pass and ID parking lot. Just keep moving. You'll see a stoplight, a big Navajo missile on display. Follow the blue signs with white letters to find your parking spot. And directions into the History Center. So, and don't worry, you're driving someplace you're not. As you get close, it's going to be intimidating for some, I think. But the security folks will make sure you get to the right spot if you go somewhere where you're not. They're all nice and friendly, and we'll make sure that you get where you need to go. So anyway, that's the story about this week. I guess we'll pause now, take our first break. And when we return, Wayne Hale will join us by phone, I think from his home in Houston. And you won't want to miss that conversation. So stay tuned to Spacewalk. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Once again, our phone lines open to you at 321-768-1240 for your phone calls. And again, the email address anytime, spacetalking@AOL.com. We'd sure love to hear from you today, as we're joined by none other than Wayne Hale, whom I have no doubt after we let a few more years pass, we'll be introducing as the legendary Wayne Hale. Wayne joined NASA in 1978 as a propulsion officer at the Johnson Space Center, worked his way up through the ranks, became a flight director in 1988, and since then had helped manage more than, 41 shuttle missions to be precise, quite often as the launch or entry flight director. He did move up into management, much to his surprise and chagrin, I think, sometimes, and became a key figure in the return to flight following the Columbia tragedy in 2003. 2008, he was assigned to the post of Deputy Associate Administrator of Strategic Partnerships, where he, among other duties, began writing a blog about his experiences and his career, and a blog that quickly became a must-read within the NASA community. Reading that blog, by the way, one day in July, he announced his retirement, and kind of sudden to a lot of folks, his last day at NASA was July 31st, and now 2 weeks later, he joins us as a private citizen, and I really couldn't be more honored to welcome back to Space Talk for a second time none other than Wayne Hale. Wayne, thanks for joining us again.
Well, it's good to talk to you, Jim, this afternoon. Great to be on the radio with you and all the folks in the Space Coast.
Well, let's start out by asking, I guess, the most simple, basic question. What's new with you?
Well, I'm living the life of a retiree. So, yes, I'm calling you from my home. It won't be quite as controlled as the NASA press site where we've done some of these things before.
Sure.
If the grandkids and the dog don't get on the phone, you'll be okay.
Well, that would actually probably add a little more color to the whole show. It might be quite welcome. So, well, look, let's talk about it. You know, you posted this blog. I don't remember the exact date, but it was early July. You entitled it All Good Things, which, of course, a lot of us Star Trek fans immediately, you know, got the reference that, you know, what's he talking about here? Something's going to happen. Something's ending. And in a very well-written blog, as they all were, you quoted from Mark Twain's Life on the Mississippi, a lengthy passage about a riverboat pilot who was at the end of his career, had come to see all the wonder and all the magic of the river that had first inspired him to take up that job, was replaced by at the end of his career, with sort of a colder, darker realization of the river's nature. There were examples of how, like, for example, a scenic ripple in the water, which looked really cool when he was younger, and now he realizes hides a rock that could tear open the boat, or that maybe a beautiful sunrise you enjoyed in your youth with a certain cloud pattern now in your experience, you recognize storms are on the way and there's danger ahead. This couple of specific quotes from Mark Twain, no, the romance and the beauty were all gone from the river. And at the end of the passage, you quote him as he wrote, and doesn't he sometimes wonder whether he has gained most or lost most by learning his trade? Message, Wayne, something in there that moved you to put that in there?
Well, no, I just identified with it because I can remember the day when I stood out on my, you know, maybe not figuratively on the television, not literally as you did, and watched Rocket take off and just wondered at the beauty and awe of it and youthful innocence and not really knowing what was going on. And after being involved in the space launch business for so many years, you know, it's a difficult business, and you know all the things or many of the things that can go wrong and all the bad things that could happen. And so you watch your rocket launches these days with a little bit different eye, not with the wonderful innocence and exuberance, but more with the, oh, gosh, I hope this works right kind of attitude. After 30 years, you know, with NASA, 32 years with NASA, I'm still enthusiastic about the space program. I think it's a great place to be. But at the same time, there is this realization that, you know, it's not all fun and games.
Yeah, and you know, we see that. I see that on the press side. The more as a young reporter I learned about this system, the more nervous I got at every launch. And it is difficult to watch when you know what's going on for real, and you better than I appreciation for those risks. I think, you know, in quoting and reading through the chapter here that you quoted from in the blog, a lot of folks, as we analyzed it, obviously without you in the room, you know, wondered whether or not there was a sense of, and I don't know if jaded is the right word, but a sense that, you know, what you saw was beautiful is now ugly and you wanted out of it.
Well, I think that might be over-interpreting the passage. I just thought that, you know, it's not the same innocent, hopeful kind of thing when I watch the rocket launch. Now it's more, I'm still excited about it, but it's there's a little bit of apprehension, too. So, and by the way, I'm not out of the business, and I don't want to be out of the business. It's just a different phase of the business.
Yeah, and I'll ask you about that in a minute. Let's explore the other part of it. Of course, you mentioned at the beginning of the blog that you were retiring for family reasons, and I don't want to ask you to repeat personal things, but can you give us a sense of kind of why now versus, let's say, a year and a half from now or 2 years from now when shuttle was going to finally be done?
Well, you know, if I were still in charge of the shuttle program, I probably would have stayed till the very end. And I thought very hard about doing that. But the fact of the matter is we have a lot of family in the area, some folks in our immediate family have some physical needs that my wife and I need to help with. Our parents are, you know, obviously getting older, and we have a lot of concern in that area in terms of being able to spend the time that's necessary with them. And and I've got this crop of grandkids that I think Grandpa needs to pay some more attention to. And for a variety of reasons, both personal and professional, it just seemed like a good time.
Well, we share notes together on Facebook, and you make your entries there. Of course, we surely understand your love for your grandkids and how much they've affected you, and it's an experience I look forward to, although not in the immediate future, gentlemen, kids, if you're listening.
At the right time, it's the best thing in the world.
That's right. Well, and talk then as we have just about 3 more minutes here before the break. Talk about your movement. SAS is the acronym, but I'm not familiar with the company. I don't think a lot of people are.
Well, one of the things I was looking for was a small technical services or consulting firm where I could have a much more flexible schedule, probably not work full-time, to allow me to do some things with my family, yet still be involved in the space business, in the human spaceflight business. I met the principals of Special Aerospace Services. Tim and Heather Balk are their names. And I had gotten to know them over a period of a couple of years and really liked their attitude toward work and what they were doing with their small company. And so one day I said, could you find a place for me? And they thought about it a while and were delighted to have me on board. And we'll be doing some consulting work, some engineering support work, for aerospace firms and maybe eventually back to the government, but for right now, just for several of the aerospace firms in Houston and up in their headquarters in the Denver, Colorado area.
Do you see that consulting being more of the human spaceflight side, your experience in dealing with that as opposed to more of a pure engineering kind of thing?
Oh, yeah. I think my days in engineering date back to slide rules and graph paper. Mm-hmm. And if they really wanted an engineering expert, they should look to somebody maybe a little bit younger. But in terms of human space flight and the rules that are involved with that, procedures and philosophy and program management, there may be some things I can offer some of these firms.
And it sounds like it's the kind of a job where you can work out of the home and do that whole thing.
Indeed it is, and as I said, at a much more flexible schedule, which is going to allow us to do more of the family sorts of things that I'm interested in.
Now, you know, we know what happens to retirees around here at the Cape. Are you going to, in terms of boards and foundations and local advocacy kind of stuff, space club kind of thing?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if some of those things do happen. I joined the NASA Alumni League, which, as you know, is a group of retirees that tries to do, among other things, educational activities. And so I expect to do several things within.
So with just about a minute left, Wayne, tell us about your last day at work. What was it like to walk the halls and be shutting down the lights and whatnot your last day?
Well, you know, it's a day of mixed emotions because I had so many colleagues and friends that are still hard at work at NASA. I was able to make the rounds and visit the Kennedy Space Center, Marshall Space Flight Center, and NASA headquarters within the last couple of weeks of my leaving. And, of course, at Johnson Space Center, where I spent most of my career, there's hardly a building that I didn't associate with some memory or some part of my career, and hundreds of folks. And so it's a little bit of a bittersweet day, but they gave me a nice retiree badge and told me I can come back and eat in the cafeteria anytime I get too lonesome.
Anytime in the cafeteria. Did you get a cake?
I did. In fact, we had a small reception about a week before I left in honor of my retirement. It was very nice, low key, which is what I wanted, and I got to see, gosh, so many folks. It was really a wonderful time.
That's great. Well, stand by, Wayne. We're going to take our 5-minute built-in hold here down at the bottom of the hour, so everyone can get caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports. We'll be back more with Wayne Hale here on Space Talk. I'm Jim Behnke, and you are listening to WMMB.
Be here for the heroes in orange jumpsuits.
Be here to feed your curiosity.
Be here for the goosebumps.
Major goosebumps.
Be here for the eye-opening.
Jaw-dropping. Excitement.
Of exploring space.
Be here for a day of fun.
And a lifetime of inspiration.
Be here at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. Now through September 6th, Florida residents receive a free child admission with each paid adult. Restrictions apply. Download your coupon at kennedyspacecenter.com/Florida.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. Brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Again, 321-768-1240 is the number to call to ask a question or comment. Local AT&T wireless customers here on the Florida Space Coast can dial *1240 to get into the studio. Or if you prefer to communicate online, send us an email to spacetalking@aol.com, which is what Pat from Satellite Beach did earlier this morning following the Atlas launch, and asking me a question about essentially, is there a frequency that you can listen to get the air-to-ground of shuttle, commentary, that kind of thing, during launches and during missions. He remembered 20 years ago there was a small radio station in Titusville that broadcast that. And my answer is, Pat, you know, when I was a reporter up until about 2004, and which was probably the last time I actually turned on a scanner, the frequency that we all used and was well publicized and operated by the local ham folks here in town was 146.94 megahertz. 146.94 megahertz. Now, I don't know if it's still active. I think it is. I would hope that it is, but I can't confirm it, and I'm not anywhere right now at the moment where I can check, so I'm just going to call that out. And if there are any ham operators or scanner buffs that know the precise answer to that question, give a quick call, 768-1240. Let Aaron know, and we'll try to get that word by the end of the show. If not, I'm going to research that and get back to you next week. By the way, during the week, you can stay in touch with Space Talk via Twitter. Space Talking is our username. You can visit the WMMB webpage to download a recording of today's show. You can check out the Space Talk page by entering keywords Space Talk, find out what's going on. And right now, you can even sign up for a cruise out of Port Canaveral beginning Friday, November 5th, on which I will be on and my wife will be on as we join some other listeners and Bill Mick and his folks and enjoy a little trip around the waters outside the Space Coast. All of that available to you on WMMBAM.com. Well, let's get back to recently retired NASA flight director and shuttle program manager Wayne Hale on the phone with us from his home in the Houston area. And Wayne, again, good to have you back. And congratulations, I should say, on your retirement. What an accomplishment and what a milestone for you in your career.
Well, it's really great to have the opportunity to do what you always wanted to do when you were a kid. And working in a space program has been a dream come true.
You know, I wanted to share with you a real quick story. And I was fortunate to interview Forrest McCartney on his last day as the Kennedy Space Center director. And I was like his last official thing before he was going to leave the office. And it was so funny, and I'll never forget this sight. His office was essentially empty, but on his desk is one of those little government cardboard boxes, you know, where you recycle things.
Mm-hmm.
And in the box was all his Kennedy Space Center director, Forrest McCartney, business cards.
That's funny.
Isn't that a great sight?
That's great.
So anyway, well, look, let's talk about NASA now that you're free of the formalities here. I know you said earlier you remain optimistic. You know the situation. You've got different camps of the community, space community, wanting to do this or that. You've got the House version of a bill of a budget. You've got a Senate version of a budget. You've got unmanned folks, the manned folks, Ares, Constellation, Techno. I mean, you know, it's all over the place. Where do you think, maybe, I don't know if you can say what you think is going to happen, but where do you think we are and where do you think we ought to be going?
Well, you know, it is a mess right now. Yeah, and I wish I could tell you what's going to wind up, but my crystal ball is as cloudy as anybody's.
Yeah.
One thing is clear is that we all want to explore space. I mean, all of us that are in the business. And I don't think that the folks who are in NASA, their goal has changed since, you know, the agency was formed back in 1958. We want to send, you know, first robotic explorers and then people not just to the moon and Mars, but all throughout the solar system and then someday perhaps beyond. And we would hope that the nation would benefit, and I think it does benefit in a great many ways from that activity. And it's just a shame right now to see that this disarray that's going on at the space policy level. And it's important to remember, everybody said, well, NASA doesn't know what they want to do. Policy is not made by any federal agency. Policy is made at the White House and ratified by the Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And then a federal executive agency like NASA or any of the other agencies, they do pretty much what they've been directed to do. We carry out those directions. And so when I hear people say, well, NASA needs to get its act together, well, no, I'm sorry. It's not the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. It's the White House, Office of Science, Technology, Policy, Office of Management and Budget, the House of Representatives, and the Senate. They need to get their act together.
Yeah.
And until they do, we're just going to see a lot of confusion and, frankly, waste of the taxpayers' money. I see a lot of these plans being proposed that just don't add up to a real coherent space program that will accomplish the kinds of goals that I'd like to see the nation and in fact, as in our leadership role, the world accomplish in space. And that's a very sad thing.
What are those goals, Wayne? I mean, is it destination? Is it Moon, Mars, asteroids, or is it more capability driven, the ability to do whatever we want with a good solid infrastructure in place?
Well, you know, my answer to that is all of the above. And the argument that, you know, keeps coming up is we need to do A, B, or C. Well, we need to do all of them in maybe perhaps a proper sequence, and certainly as we have resources to do them, but it shouldn't be a one or the other. We have a great deal of exploration yet to do. We have a lot of exploitation in space we can do.
Mm-hmm.
And I am firmly convinced that we eventually will have colonies on Mars, for example. May not happen in our lifetime, but
right.
We will become a multi-planet species and move out into the entirety of the solar system and use it for our benefit. And I think that is what we need to look forward to.
Given the way that NASA is today and the fact that for the last 25 or so years, you know, it has been an operate. I mean, most of what we've been doing is space shuttle operations. Yes, it's a test vehicle. Yes, there's been engineering being done, but it's essentially operating this vehicle. You know, is that the kind of expertise that we need to go develop and invent the new stuff that we need to do? Is the NASA today the NASA of Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, is it capable of doing what we want to do?
Well, let's talk about, you know, why we got there and what it means. Back in the glory days of Apollo, the nation was spending almost 5% of the federal budget on space exploration. In the last 30 years or so, the national consensus is that we can only afford to spend about a half of 1% of the federal budget. So, you know, just that for inflation or whatever you want, that's just a much less capable program. The Augustine Committee, when they reviewed the options, said that NASA's budget needed to be increased by about $3 billion a year to have a program that the nation could be proud of. Unfortunately, the president handed us a program and no more money. So their response, which I think would be my response, is if that's all you're going to spend, then we are going to have about what we've had before, or maybe less, as it turns out. If we really want to do some incredible things in space, we're going to have to provide the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, another email question just popped in here. This one, Patrick from Daytona Beach, asking about commercial activities, commercially developed space vehicles. How do you see NASA and the so-called commercial space world working together to do things like going to the space station, carrying astronauts into and out of orbit?
Well, you know, that is what I spent the last 6 or 8 months of my time at NASA working on, is how do we enable this commercial human spaceflight opportunity, which clearly was one of the major components of the Augustine Report, and since February 1st has been a clear goal of the Obama administration.
Mm-hmm.
And there are certain things that I think commercial operators can do in space, and providing human ferry flights from Cape Kennedy or Kennedy Space Center to the International Space Station is not outside the realm of possibility. And I think some folks, some of those companies are well on their way to do it. However, it is not an easy path, and in some regards I fear that some of the commercial operators, and it's hard to tell whether this is just posturing for the media or what, tend to make light of the difficulties. And in fact, that's sort of what I would like to do, is maybe help them through the inevitable difficulties that they're going to have in developing these spacecraft.
But these difficulties, if they can be overcome, technically if they can be overcome, I think there's some concern out there. One, that whatever NASA does decide to do in terms of insight or oversight into the commercial activity is going to get in the way of them being able to realize the benefits of the commercial economy or whatever. And the second thing is that there's no market for the commercial space carrying people into orbit quite yet. And I don't mean to tell you, we've only got about 30 seconds before our next break, so if you want to take a crack at it, and then we'll come back and finish the story.
Well, you know, asking somebody that spent their whole career working for the government to tell you about a business case for private industry is probably not my area of expertise.
Right, absolutely. And maybe that's part of the concern and the debate out there, that, you know, the government's telling the commercial world, go do this, and yet the commercial folks, they want to, but there's no market for it yet. They can't make an economic justification. Well, in case, Wayne, stand by. We're going to take a quick final break, come back with more with Wayne Hale, wrap up some conversations with him. This is Space Talk. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to WMMB.
Now, back to our own mission specialist, Jim Banky.
And again, I'm back with our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. Wayne Hale still on the phone with us from Houston. And, well, I guess we kind of cut each other off early and before the last break. We were asking you about the commercial space world. Not sure there's a business case for it, but do you think that NASA might, whether on purpose or not, levy so much insight or oversight into what the commercial space folks want to do that it would make them difficult for them to do it in an economical way that they want to do it?
Well, you know, as I spent my last several months in the agency working on exactly that problem, I am very afraid that the agency will put too much bureaucracy and turn the SpaceXs and the Orbitals and the other folks, these new entrepreneurial, flexible, businesses into aerospace contractors much like Boeing or Lockheed, because the first drafts, at least, of the requirements that have come out of the mill there are very much business as usual. Lots of oversight, lots of heavy government requirements, and I'll be real frank with you, Jim. One of the reasons that impelled me to leave was I was lobbying very hard to try to change some of that, and was not making a lot of headway.
Yeah, and how much of all that oversight is cultural bureaucracy versus, or also risk adverse?
Well, you know, the system is built up over many years, and it all started with good intentions, trying to make sure that the work is done to the highest standards and ensuring safety. And some of that is definitely required to provide a reliable, safe launch vehicle or spacecraft. But the fact of the matter is, and I can speak to this from the in-house, we've gone overboard. The agency has become bureaucratic. It becomes very difficult to do what you need to do and not trip over some of these regulations and requirements. And you certainly spend a lot of time trying to work your way out of some of these things. And at the end of the discussion, you find out that probably it's just been an exercise and a gab fest. It's really sad. Now, some of it's good, but some of it is really burdensome.
Well, and why we're saying that, the return to flight after Columbia, and we had that little the little shim piece in the tiles.
Yes.
And all that work and effort to go pull that thing out because there was a concern about heating. And I understand it was the first flight after Columbia, and I understand tiles were sensitive then. But you know, after all these years and all the things that vehicle's been through. You know, I always thought that this was the beginning of, not the end, but the beginning of this, we've gone overboard.
Well, I you know, from folks, maybe from your standpoint on the outside of the agency, that became apparent to you at that point. I'll tell you, from inside, it was apparent to me long before that we had gone overboard in many areas and made it more costly and more difficult. Now, I'm not sure what the factor is, whether cutting back on that bureaucratic overhead would save you 10% or 25%. I don't think it'll save you 90% of the cost of a launch vehicle, which is what some of the really commercial ideologue people believe will happen. Prices will come down as we find an appropriate way to pursue things in the future. Really, the cost of getting into low Earth orbit is the biggest hurdle to the exploration of space right now.
Oh,
so I welcome some fresh and innovative ideas and the pressures of the marketplace that may help us make better decisions on some of these areas.
Well, and now, Duane, with a couple minutes left, let's lighten up a little bit here. And you've also just mentioned in one of your last blogs about this book,
right,
that you're working on. And I'm very excited about this. I'm very much looking forward to it. Talk about this little writing project that you and your shuttle team members have been working on.
Well, you know, after the president announced that we're going to retire the shuttle about 5 years ago, we decided that it would be good. There are going to be a lot of books. There have been a lot of books, will be in the future, a lot of books written about the space shuttle, what it did, what it accomplished, what it meant. We thought it would be good to capture a book from those of us who really worked inside the program, our perspective, so that our story would be told. And so we have several hundred contributors, and it's been very hard to get a shuttle book in one volume. Probably could have written an encyclopedia set.
Wow.
But our book, Wings in Orbit, is going to the publisher very shortly. We have all the content in, and the final proofing and editing is being completed, and we'll be going to the publisher very shortly. Of course, we thought the shuttle program was going to end this September. It won't contain the last couple of flights, but the book should be available at your bookstore in late January, early February, and you can order advanced copies online. I don't have the link right in front of me, but if you search on it, I think on the web you can find the link, and it's certainly on the NASA webpage, get an advanced order in for the book. And I think you'll find out many things that you did not know about the space shuttle.
Give me in 20 seconds, Wayne, give me one good example.
Oh, gosh. We talk about the scientific accomplishments, and I was astounded, even having worked in the program, at some of the scientific accomplishments that were done in the observatories and human experimentation. And I really can't talk a whole lot about it because we don't have time, but, you know, we have a new vaccine that's coming out for Salmonella, the food poisoning, mm-hmm. which was discovered in space through some of the work that happened in cooperation between the space shuttle and space station researchers.
Absolutely neat. And in fact, there's a local angle to that story, and that's a great topic for another issue of Space Talk. Wayne, we got to wrap it up with you, sir. Thank you so much for being on and being on this show for only 2 weeks after your retirement. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, and best wishes, and we will definitely stay in touch with you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure to talk with you anytime, Jim.
Great. Thanks, Wayne. Well, take care and give your grandkids a hug. Well, look, with the successful launch from the Cape this morning of the Atlas V, it looks like our next blastoff could very well be the second flight of the Falcon 9 in late September. SpaceX planning to launch its first fully functioning Dragon spacecraft. Dragon is the vehicle designed to carry cargo to the International Space Station under a commercial agreement with NASA that Wayne and I were talking about just a little bit ago. After that launch, again, not a good specific date yet, but on the range now, a Delta IV Heavy, targeted to fly October 19th, and that would be followed by Shuttle Discovery on November 1st. Don't forget the new Air Force Space and Missile History Center, now open to the public. Just head to the south gate of Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. Drive as far as you can on State Road 401 until you get to the stoplight with the Navajo missile on display. Follow the blue signs with the white lettering, and the History Center will be open today until 5 and from noon to 4 tomorrow. It's free admission, and please give it a look and let me know what you think. As for me, I'm heading straight home now, 5 hours away from my Minnesota Vikings playing their first preseason game. I hope that it'll be a good time. Certainly the food will be served hot and the drinks will be served cold. That's it for today. Thanks again for listening. Space Talk sponsored by United Space Alliance, a production of Mila Solutions. Aaron Michaels, my engineer. Home Mortgage Law Show is next here on WMMB. I'm Jim Bankey. We'll talk to you again real soon.